Hey, it's Jenny Nash, founder and CEO of Author Accelerator. In the next few weeks, we're going to be wrapping up the special blueprint challenge that we did here at the hashtag AmWriting podcast. And the people who signed up for that and completed it will be getting a list of special offers from Author Accelerator book coaches to help them with their blueprints. That list is exclusive to people who did the summer challenge. But if, as the summer closes, you're at a point where you feel like you could use some help from a book coach, I want to urge you to go play around in our book coach directory. We've certified more than 260 book coaches in fiction, nonfiction, and memoir, and you can check them all out at authoraccelerator.com/matchme. That's authoraccelerator.com/matchme.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, writers. I'm Jenny Nash, and this is the Am Writing Podcast, the place where we talk about writing all the things, short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, and proposals. Today, I'm here solo, and we're going to dig into a part of the writing process that comes way before you write anything, which is giving yourself permission to write in the first place. So many writers are shut down by teachers, people who love them, critique partners, well-meaning editors and book coaches, perhaps the entire culture, and the impact of that shutting down can last for decades, if not entire lifetimes. In my blueprint framework, which is a method of inquiry for starting a project, the first question is, why write this book? Why do you want to do this? It's amazing to me the number of times that the deep level why has to do with reclaiming a voice that was shut down. My colleague and friend Julie Arts was shut down when she was 25 years old. And 20 years later, she's finally grappling with what happened and feeling the creative spaciousness that eluded her until now. She's been on the show before, but I invited her back to talk about this important topic. Welcome back to the show, Julie. We're so happy to have you.
Thanks for having me back. I'm so happy to be here.
So this topic is one of my favorites, which is the thing that happens way before the writing happens in your own mind and your own heart around what you're allowed to write and what you have permission to write and all of those things. And you shared a story with me that is sparking this conversation about something that happened to you when you were younger, where you were really shut down around a very specific piece of writing in a very specific way. Can you share that story with our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing is the story I'm about to tell is from almost 25 years ago. And I had practically forgotten about it until recently when it came bubbling up to the surface and I realized that it's actually my writer's origin story, right? My heroine's origin story, like a superhero would have. And it's shocking the way that memory can work that way, right? That these things that we didn't even know were important at the time can become so important and so significant to us. So I was in my mid-20s and I was working as a technical writer in the high-tech industry. I was not working in publishing. I did not consider myself a writer, but I had seen NPR's All Stories Considered, a call for stories about your childhood. They had a specific theme. And I've always enjoyed telling stories and had always enjoyed writing, had written a lot of poems at that point, but not really any fiction or nonfiction of any kind other than poetry. But I thought, oh, this'll be fun. I'll do it. And the story that popped into my head was not something at the time that I thought was that important or, again, not something that had this like huge impact. But I wrote it and it was like 1,200 words, not super long. And I happily and excitedly fired it off to my brother who was a part of the story, who was in the story, my younger brother, and my parents. Didn't think another thing about it until I got an email back from my parents saying, that never happened. And I just want to say up front that I don't think that they did this maliciously. I don't think that they were trying to hurt me or wound me or set me on this path that I would be on a podcast talking about this 23 years later. I think they just honestly didn't remember. And my brother was only 5 when this story happened. So it makes sense to me, too, that he also did not remember. But the impact that it had was huge because I never sent the story off. I didn't write any memoir again for so long.
So wait, okay, I have so many questions. What was the story? Do you remember?
I do. And I want to say also that I think I have a different perspective on why my parents might have not remembered the story now than I did when I was 25, when I didn't have children of my own. I wasn't a parent. I was really, really still a baby and certainly a baby writer as well. It was a story about, okay, so many of us kids who grew up in the 70s and 80s probably had this experience, but my parents had a plywood paddle that they used to spank us when we were bad. Younger people hearing this now might be completely shocked. It was extremely normal, not something that was considered abuse or considered horrible or whatever. It was very, very normal at that time. And I have a very clear memory of when I was about 7. It was the fall and my parents were out in the yard doing kind of fall cleanup in the garden, and they had a burn pile going. And my brother and I climbed up on the counter and we got that plywood paddle from its spot on the top of the refrigerator. We took it into the basement and literally chopped it up into little pieces, put it in our pockets, and went and threw it on the burn pile. And
That's amazing.
It's amazing. And the thing that I loved about the story, the one piece that I can remember of that 1,200 words that I wrote in the image that's cemented in my mind is of my brother, little tiny elfin 5-year-old brother, holding this paddle above his head like, yes, we've got the thing. We're going to do the really bad, rebellious thing. Like we were Peter Pan, in Neverland, not going to grow up. We're going to, spite these parents and we're going to go do this thing. And we had this workshop in the basement. We had access to all kinds of tools, including saws that we then used to chop this little plywood paddle up into bajillion pieces. And we burned it. And I think at that point, we were probably maybe even aging out of the age where we would have been paddled. And so my parents, when they figured out what we had done, in my memory, actually laughed about it. Like couldn't believe that we dared to do it, but there were no horrible repercussions or there was no anger or whatever over us having done it. Maybe a little shock that we had dared to do such a thing. But so to me, it was a really funny story. It was a story of my brother and I and the no good that we got up to when we weren't supervised, which there are many stories like that from our childhood. But I see now why my parents might have chosen to forget that we had a paddle and that we ever took it and burned it, right?
Yeah.
I sort of get that.
My husband's mother had a wooden spoon. It was common for sure. So you write this story and you send it to your parents and your brother, and they both say, not we don't remember it or we don't remember it that way or it actually happened this different way. They literally say that didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that I need to throw out here right now is that I was living in England and my brother and my parents were still in my hometown of Indianapolis. So there, and 20 some years ago, like we had email. It was extremely expensive even to call. So it's not like we were not jumping on Zoom to discuss this. So there was not a lot of nuance to the communication. Email was still like a little bit new to my parents. And so I give them all sorts of grace for not having, again, meant to wound me with that didn't happen.
Sure.
But the truth is, I internalized it in a very, very real way. A way that I'm obviously still unpacking now. And when I realized that I had not done any not creative nonfiction, personal writing about my life and why that might have been. That's when this memory bubbled up.
I mean, we're going to get to that because it's just extraordinary. But back to that exact moment. So the call had been to send in a story to this NPR thing. You wrote this story. It sounds like you liked your story. And then you didn't send it in. You did not put it into this contest or this.
I never sent it.
Did you just did nothing with it?
I did nothing with it. In fact, I, 20 computers later, I tried to find the story to see if I still had it kicking around, and I don't even have it.
So, oh, wow. So
it's disappeared. It did not make the move, I guess, back to the U.S. with us when we left England.
So do you remember after that what you still felt called to be a writer, pulled to be a writer? You wrote things that were creative. Do you remember the step after that when you wrote something new? Did it feel dangerous or brave or, oh, I'll try this again? Or did you sort of put that incident out of your mind?
It's really interesting because what I did was just like, oh, my memory cannot be trusted, so I will just make up stories instead. And I switched straight over to fiction. Which is really, yeah, again, looking back, I'm like, wow.
Right? Wow is right. Well, and what I find so fascinating about this, I mean, you're a book coach, so you know how this goes. People often will make choices about structure or genre or what have you to protect themselves. And sometimes it goes the way that you're talking about, oh, I'll make this fiction and that will protect me. I'm trying to think, does it ever go the other way? There's usually a reckoning in some manner where a writer is trying to protect themselves. But in your estimation, does it ever work?
It doesn't. And the first probably half dozen stories that I wrote were almost what I would now call autofiction, where, yeah, sure, they were fiction, but they were straight out of my life. In fact, my first novel that I wrote very, very much was grappling with the same things that, in fact, the first novel I wrote, every novel I've written is me grappling with my life in some way. That's not to say that every character I write is me, but that I think I was still really, really grappling with the same things I had been grappling with in that story.
What
is memory?
Amazing.
Like, yeah, what did my childhood mean? How did it impact me? All that stuff. It was still just bubbling up in my fiction. But the thing that I've learned and the thing that I tell my coaching clients all the time is that if you're writing stuff that is super thinly veiled autobiography, memoir, and you're not aware of it, it's never going to come off on the page, right? It's going to be too close and you're not going to have the perspective you need to actually write it as fiction. And that was true in all of my early writing, I think, through my 20s. That I was still grappling with those same things and I was still not quite giving myself permission to tell the real truth, right? I could just change up a few of the details so I'm not telling the truth. But honestly, fiction, as much as memoir, tells a truth.
Sure, right. I mean, good fiction, right?
So, right, absolutely.
Before we leave the 25-year-old you writing that piece and sending it off to your family. I mean, it's something I talk about all the time, which is sending your work to the wrong people at the wrong time. You wouldn't have known that at the time. Most people don't. They don't think about it. They send their work to the people that love them or the people who will understand that story, which is what you did. Do you have any memory of what you hoped their reaction would be?
I wanted them to laugh. I wanted them to remember it with me and think that it was a good, well-written story. So, of course, with that high expectation in place, I felt terrible. when they didn't remember. And I think even at some point discussing it with my father after the fact, and he has passed away now, so I can't ask him. I think that, you know, I said to him, it didn't really feel good when you said this didn't happen. And he was like, I don't know, maybe it did happen. I don't remember. You know, his second response was a little bit closer to what would have maybe been an okay response. And again, that's why I think that email communication was a little dodgy. Maybe I shouldn't have put quite so much stake in it as I did, but it also makes sense, right? Like, we're sending our babies out into the world and nobody wants to hear back, that baby is ugly, or worse, that baby doesn't exist.
Right? And what's interesting,
that's not real. It's not true.
Their reaction was about the memory and nothing at all about your crafting of it, which is sounds like you were really proud of. You wrote a story and it was to this prompt and it was going to be so great as an entry in this thing. There was no response to that piece of it. And that's a blow as well. So you told me that, you know, time goes by, you're writing fiction, you're now shifting over to work in the publishing industry and helping other writers. You worked for years with Pitch Wars and you've worked with SCBWI, like you're becoming an expert, but you're still not writing anything that could be construed to be about your real life. And what you told me was you were waiting for people to die.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing with memoir, right? And a lot of writers that I work with who are writing memoir say, oh, I can't write this story until so-and-so or such-and-such is gone. And so, you know, when I did lose my father, I thought, okay, there are some things I can write about now that I couldn't write about before. And the truth is I could not. I was so blocked. So I just kept running away from fiction. And it really struck me actually when you and I first started working together. Yeah, I don't know if you remember this, but you told me at one point, I think it was when I had first started coaching one of my first memoir clients. And you said, not only are you a great memoir coach, but I think you're also a memoirist. And I was like, oh no, I am not. I only write fiction because I have this hang up. But the thing is, I love memoir and I love working with memoir writers. And I am feeling the call to write it, and at the same time the absolute terror of being told again, this didn't happen, this isn't real, your memory is wrong. And
right, so
what I realized,
yeah, let's just stop and think about that for a minute, because what does that mean to a writer to be told that, right? It means like you don't understand what this form is. You don't have permission to tell the story. You don't own your voice. Like, it's so deep.
Mm-hmm.
And you felt that all these years. I mean, it's really very sad, isn't it?
It is. And I mean, I wasn't sitting there stewing in this. I think it was really bubbling under the surface without me realizing it. And it was really my gut reaction to, oh no, I cannot write memoir, that made me start to question. Because the truth is, I mean, I can write anything. I've written a verse novel, I've written middle grade YA and adult, I've written contemporary, I've written fantasy. So why not nonfiction? I write about writing all the time. I write tons of nonfiction, but I don't write about my life very often. And why is that? And so then I started to get curious. And this is when writers always get in trouble, right? When we get curious about something, it's where the magic happens. It's where the trouble starts brewing, right? And I started writing a memoir. I don't know if it's the memoir, but it's a memoir. And it was really about being haunted. And I've come to understand really that what I am haunted by is not so much these people from my past who have passed on, but the doubts about memory, about what's real, about what the meaning was of all these things that I experienced. And so I don't know when or if this memoir will ever be ready for the world, but I am working on it.
That's so big. So something happened, and I want to get the chronology right about this, where you were hosting a retreat for writers or a gathering of writers around the new year. I think this last, we're talking here in the middle of 2024, and I think this last turn of the year, right? And and something happened there that helped you change. Was that before you started to write this memoir or after? Was it sort of in the middle of it?
I had been poking around on the memoir in 2023. I finished a big project early 2023, a fiction project. And while it was out kind of being shopped around, I was in that space, that liminal space between projects where I was like, what am I going to work on next? And I thought like, oh, the memoir. And I have a couple of colleagues who have been asking after the memoir for quite some time. And so I did some writing on it. And that is when that sense of haunting started to come up, but I couldn't quite get it to work because the ghosts that I was writing were all people from my past, and not everybody who was haunting me in a bad way. I had beloved family members and friends who had passed were a part of the book, but I didn't really make progress. And again, when I came up with a fiction story idea, I dropped that memoir and went right back to the fiction this fall. And I mean, I'm going to be honest, I love this project that I'm working on. It's a really, really a good one. And it's challenging me and stretching me in all the right ways. But then I did have a gathering of writers at my house with a couple of friends of mine. And we put together this sort of past, present, and future set of activities as a creative reset for the new year. And it was really through the process of a guided meditation that we did into our past that really made me realize that I was still hung up on this thing that had happened to me when I was 25, 26 years old. And I was like, wow. And I did the same thing that I always do when I have a revelation like that. It's not fully formed yet. I know there's something there and I have to talk with my husband about it. I have to talk with my writing ladies and I have to talk with my therapist and I have to mull it over for a while. So I mulled it over for quite some time, a couple of weeks maybe. And then I had started this process of rebranding my business, as you know. And I was talking to the team that's helping me with the rebranding, and they asked me what my origin story was. And as soon as they said that, boom, it all clicked into place. The memory, what it meant, how it tied into this memoir that I had been trying and failing to write ever since, and everything else. And I just told them the story, and they were recording it, furiously typing, and said that it gave them chills. And I think I was on Zoom the next day with you, and I was like, Jenny, this thing happened. Listen to it, and now we're here. And I'm still a couple months later, still trying to really process and absorb what it helped me realize about what it means to be a writer.
Yeah, what it means to write something true. So at that gathering of writers around the new year, you had a ritual in which a bonfire was involved and you were putting things to let go in that bonfire. And what did you put in there?
Yeah, so that was actually the activity that I hosted, that I was in charge of. And it's an activity that I've done with my clients in the past. And we write, it can be one of two things. We write down either a letter to doubt Or we write down things that we're ready to let go of. Past rejections, past hurts, whatever. Write them down on a piece of paper, and then everyone together goes and puts them in the fire. And we watch them disappear, right? We watch the fire consume them and the smoke rise up and then dissipate. And then it's gone. And the thing that's incredibly powerful about doing that in a group with 25 people, which I had never done in such a large group before, was the feeling of collective lightness that came from all of us letting go those things that had been holding us back before. And I had this just enormous sense of both of lightness, but also of just permission to really let that stuff be in the past and to stop letting it hold me back. And I realized, and this is the key of all of this, that I had to give myself permission. Nobody was going to tell me, oh yeah, that's true. You wrote something and it's true. You're right. You're right, Julie. But like, I'm a former child of accelerated classes who grew up in the 80s and 90s, Gen X. Like, I'm constantly seeking approval from other people. And I realized I was never going to get it. Nobody is going to get my writing and what I'm trying to do as much as I'm going to, and understand it as deeply as I'm going to, and understand what I'm trying to do. And that's okay. It doesn't take away from the truth of what I'm writing now.
Have you realized, I don't know if you've realized that your story went from literal fire to fire?
I just the second realized it, and I was like, wow. I didn't realize that. And it is really interesting because that original story was about burning something that had been painful to us. Something that we saw as a symbol of control.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, like yeah. A symbol of oppression. You tried to get rid of it and it didn't. And then it was negated those years later. Like, I mean, it's wild. Like, it didn't even exist. And then you had to burn that part of the story to reclaim the original story. Have you rewritten the original story?
I haven't. I've been super interested about whether it's going to bubble up in what I'm writing. So far, I've really been in more of a story present, like more in my adult life. And I'm sure that I'm going to have to dig back into childhood. I'm just not far enough along in the project yet to feel out what that's going to look like. Although I'm now really feeling that those two fires would be amazing bookends.
I know. I know. It's too poetic, really. I mean, it's really quite fascinating in so many ways. But the reason I'm so glad we're having this conversation and sharing it with other people is that usually these are the kinds of conversations that you would only have after there's been a big successful project. And then you tell that story like, haha, back in the day. And look, here I sit in my success looking at that. And I needed to go through that to learn my thing. And, you know, it's kind of all a foregone conclusion that it turned out okay. And what I like about talking to you in this moment is that's not where we're standing when we're talking about this thing. We're really talking about the moments very soon after you gave yourself that permission and you claimed this story and you're raising your voice. And I can hear it in your voice and your passion that's the power, right? That's the power, not necessarily what's going to come from it because we don't know, but that you turned that corner or you literally burned that narrative to the ground and now you get to claim it. Do you feel that sense of sort of freedom? You said lightness, the lightness of the group.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really, really do. And it's funny to say that because 2022-2023, terrible writing years for me. I had three projects that went out on sub that didn't sell. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, I feel like people can really deeply identify with this probably right now. So even though that's what's happening, that's my publishing backstory from the last couple of years. And even though I'm just, you know, a little tiny bit into this memoir and maybe about halfway into this novel that I'm writing, I feel different. I feel different, and that makes a difference to the work, to the energy I'm able to bring to it, how I feel about it. I already feel success in these projects now, even though they're not finished yet, even though they're not sold yet. I still feel confident that I'm telling the truth, that I'm doing the thing. And what it gave me, in addition to that lightness and joy about my own writing, was it brought together my writing life with my coaching life, because it now, what has clicked into place is this is why I'm so passionate about helping other writers, so that maybe they will not spend 20 years trying not to write memoir because somebody invalidated them. You know, I get clients all the time who had a teacher or a former lover or a friend or a critique partner, someone in a writing workshop who told them, you're wrong, this is bad, start over again, this isn't true, this isn't right. And it deeply wounds us. And sometimes, as was the case with me, without even realizing how deeply it affects us. And so if I can help other people burn that and let it go and let it dissipate up into the air like I was able to do in January, I want to do that. That will help me put even more stories out into the world than I could possibly ever put by myself, because I can help other writers feel this lightness and feel this freedom to actually tell their stories.
I mean, that's incredible to tie those, all of those pieces together. It feels like you're sitting in a deep truth. You're sitting in your truth, and maybe all those years you weren't. I don't know. It's interesting. Maybe you needed the second fire.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether I was not sitting in my truth, but certainly I was not sitting in awareness. I was not sitting in clarity the way that I am now. And it's good. You know, I'm about to turn 50 next year. And I told my kids the other night, I'm like, 50 is the new 30, man. I found myself. I am ready.
That's amazing. Well, where can listeners find you if they want to get some of that fire into their own writing?
Yeah, well, I'm going to share a downloadable that people can get in the show notes that even has some of the exercises that we were talking about that I did in January with my writing buddies. But also, you can always find me on Instagram. I'm Julie Arts on all the socials, actually, and on my website, which is julieArts.com. And I love to connect with writers, to talk to writers on social media or on Zoom or in writing classes. I'd love to come talk to your writing group about my experiences, all the things. I'm all story all the time now. So,
well, thank you for being willing to talk about this in a vulnerable place in the part of the process. But I think it's the place so many writers get stuck or stalled. And I loved hearing your story. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for making it happen.
Okay, everyone, until next time, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save, pause, stop.
Thank you.